You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Welcome back to SportsbookWire.com's Bet Slippin' Podcast. We're a new podcast of the USA Today Sports Network. This is our fourth episode. I'm the host, Jeff Clark. I'm one of the contributors here at Sportsbook Wire, and I'm joined by a colleague of mine, Eston McLaren, another contributor over there at Sportsbook Wire. What's up, Eston?
Jeff, just sweating this Tampa Bay Lightning Columbus Blue Jackets first round game. As you know, we're shooting this Tuesday night. It is 8:45 Eastern time. This hockey game started in Toronto, Ontario, in the Eastern time zone at 3 p.m. Eastern. And they're still going. They're halfway through the fourth overtime. And I bet you we finish before this hockey game finishes.
What's the most amount of overtime there's been in a playoff game?
At least five. Last tweet I saw was 5-10 minutes ago, and at that point it was the seventh longest playoff game in history. I think we're headed well past that. If it gets to a fifth overtime, it'll be only the fifth ever to do that.
How long are you willing to watch before you turn it off?
Standard-ish bedtime. I'll make an exception, stay up a little bit later just because it's a special circumstance. But, I mean, there's supposed to be another game in Toronto tonight. The Boston Bruins and Carolina Hurricanes were supposed to play 8 p.m. Eastern. I think they were supposed to start. They can't start until 87 and a half minutes after that game is done or some weird time like that in the neighborhood of 90 minutes. So those two teams are just hanging out in their hotel waiting for this game to end so that they can go play a game still. They're not going to start until, well, as of now, well past 10 p.m. Eastern.
Well, okay, are they playing on the same rink? Is there like an 87-minute delay to like resurface the ice and stuff like that?
Yes, to redo the ice, to get one team out of there, clean everything, and get the other team in there.
So they're just going to push it back?
I think they have to now, but there's supposed to be another two games tomorrow. So I don't know if they're just going to have these guys play at something ridiculous like 10 p.m. tomorrow or 10 a.m. tomorrow. It's a weird situation we got going on.
Did you put any money on this? Are you sweating this at all?
I didn't have any money on this one. I had the Bruins money line. I had them at -130 to beat Carolina in the second game. But since then, I've gone ahead and like the money line, the spread, the over-under were taken off the board for that game. But you can still get in there with the alternate lines and the props. So a couple overtime periods ago, I bet 0-0 first period score. I bet no team to score in the first 10 minutes. And I bet neither team to score three goals in the game. So I just want to hammer the under in that game. But they might not even play it tonight and wake up fresh tomorrow and score a whole bunch of goals. So I don't know if those bets are going to stand if this game gets pushed back. I really hope not. And just as I'm saying this, Bruins-Canes has already been rescheduled to 11 a.m. tomorrow. So there we go.
At least they got a contingency plan. That's pretty cool.
Yes, yeah. It's surprising, really, because who knew that if you start a game at 3 p.m., you can't play a second game that same day?
So I don't know how much you know about live betting. And you know what? Just to kind of set the stage here for what we're going to talk about, it's not going to be all hockey. We're going to talk real quick about baseball. I'm going to talk about some of the bets that I lost and maybe some information or education that I got from losing these bets. That's the second best thing about the second best outcome you can get in sports gambling is learning something. The first is money, of course. But we're also going to continue our NFL division previews. This week, we're going to do the NFC West. Last week, we did the AFC North. And we're going to do a special game in our BetMGM Buggin' section. It's probably going to be more me or Esten Buggin' in this case. But what we're going to do is a special Stanley Cup playoffs first round pick 'em. Me head up against Esten. It's going to be like a series price draft. I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into it.
This will be kind of a litmus test to see if it is once and for all BetMGM Buggin' or if it's you and I Buggin'. If neither one of us can come out on top in this one, then we got to cut BetMGM some slack.
If it ends in a draw, given the rules, I think we just end the podcast after whatever episode 5 or 6. It'd be a bummer. It'd be impossible. Anyways, we'll get into that in a second. But while we're on hockey, before we get out of hockey and then get back into it, just because it just popped into my head, what kind of live betting action have you ever done or made in hockey? I'm clicking into the game on BetMGM's website. Check out BetMGM. All of our odds, I forgot to mention this, all of our odds are brought to you by BetMGM. They're operational in Nevada, West Virginia, New Jersey, Indiana, and Colorado. So all the listeners out there, be sure to check out BetMGM. They have great promotions. If it's your first time playing with them or betting with them, I'm sure you'll find them as soon as you go into the website. Anyways, I'm on the Columbus Blue Jackets, Tampa Bay Lightning live betting menu. Everything's locked out now. How do you get your bets in a live game? Do you have to wait for puck stoppage?
Yes, typically intermissions, of course, the big time to do it. But yeah, any sort of prolonged stoppage, and you just got to be quick. You got to be watching the entire time and dialed in at those big moments. You know, as soon as somebody gets hurt on the other team, right after an early goal is a good time to bet the team that gets scored on, because hey, you score a goal 5 minutes into the game, there's 55 minutes left. The lines way overreact to that. So especially if the pregame underdog scores that first goal early on, you have the original favorite with lots of time left on the clock to get that back. So yeah, you got to react quickly and react the other way to those big moments in the game that everyone else thinks that's going to be the sign of the game being over and that team going on to win.
Sure, you got to zag where everyone else is zigging. I guess a similar concept or something that I'd be familiar with would be betting on the Rockets when they give up a 10-0 run and to start off the game, something similar to that. Betting explosive offensive teams if they get down a goal or two early. So I hear you. That makes perfect sense to me. Let's chat.
Yeah, especially.
Go ahead.
Especially if a team lets in a power play goal, let's say, then they're probably going to get really high odds for the comeback win. Well, a power play goal is basically a fluke. They're not going to spend the rest of the game on the power play. If they're a good even strength team, especially if you know those analytics, then yeah, you can get them at a great value, and that's the great way to do it. It's not that different from basketball or football. It's just going the opposite way of the lines and not being scared to take that risk and trust what the books were showing you before the game started.
All right. Well, that might dovetail well into our Holden L segment, which we don't really have a drop for. And we're kind of workshopping it, but it's essentially where we just talk about the bets that we failed on the past week, if there are any, or if there are any maybe lessons or things that stood out to you in your week of betting. I have a few that I could talk about. Is there anything that's chapping your keister this week? You went on a pretty epic rant last week.
Last week was rough. I learned my lesson. This week I stuck to my bread and butter. I made some decent wins off of these NHL qualification round and round robin games especially. I had a good weekend there, in particular Columbus Blue Jackets getting past the Maple Leafs. Talk about how I was betting them every game before. They won in 5 games, made a nice little profit there over the Maple Leafs. And the PGA Championship, I was big in on that. That was a pretty rough weekend on the golf course for me. I took a loss there, but three of my guys, I was on the highest. They all finished in the top 10. So let that be a reminder, especially to me, but to listeners, you need to complement those outright picks in golf with top 10s, top 5s, top 20s, all these other matchups, props. I have a golf article or a golf props article go up every Wednesday morning on sportsbookwire.com, looking at the props and those extra bets for every tournament. That's where the real money is made in betting golf, and I gave myself a bold reminder of that last weekend.
Oh, and real quick, while you just reminded me, shout out to our website that we write for, sportsbookwire.com. If you like hearing our handicaps and our gambling angles here on the podcast, you're going to love the website. We're handicapping essentially every North American professional sports game that's going on. I feel comfortable saying that, right? We'll just say a vast majority of the games you'll get picks.
We're pretty close.
You'll get picks against the spread, against the total, some breakdowns of games and just information, betting information heading into the games. I took some serious L's last week, especially in the beginning of the week. I actually rounded out to having a decent week. I just do Monday through Sunday snapshots. That's kind of how I chart my success. Anyways, the biggest L that I took last week was the Miami Heat +9, and I also took them on the money line against the Bucks. It was actually my best bet. I'm doing this best bet for Hoops Hype for every day of the NBA bubble. So every day there's NBA action, you can see my best bet on Hoops Hype. And I was doing pretty good. I was really feeling myself with the Miami Heat. I put pretty much my rent on it at +9. They were up 24 at one point, and ended up losing not only outright, but they didn't even cover the +9. They were playing without Jimmy Butler. And it was the game after the Milwaukee Bucks lost to the Brooklyn Nets that caused your epic rant last week. My thought was because the Bucks didn't play Giannis or Chris Middleton in like a one or two possession game in the second half, they were just going to sit these guys because they already clinched the first seed. I was wrong. they played a lot of Giannis and Middleton, and turns out that the reigning MVP and the second highest score and paid player on the Bucks do matter. They do. And I got
what a
they
nightmare.
Boat raced them in the second half. It was a 70. I think it was 70-35 in the second half. Still lapping.
I don't get a lot of basketball games like that. We see it far too often. You know, just when you think a team's going to do what makes sense and mail it in, they all of a sudden they don't want to do that anymore. And it's very frustrating for guys like you and me putting actual money on these. And, you know, you can never properly handicap personal motivation, I guess, or will to win,
yeah,
if you want to say it.
That's what makes sports betting for me the most fun, honestly, is trying to figure this out. You know, it makes it very frustrating when you lose money on it, but you know, that's the ball game, especially down the stretches in the season. I mean, you know, figuring out motivation is a huge factor in betting the end of the NBA and the end of the NFL regular season. You know, I liken the Lakers' recent performance and the Bucks' recent performance, especially that layup or that egg that they laid to the Nets, is this is essentially week 17 for the New England Patriots. They don't care. So, you know, you got to figure out and try to handicap maybe the times that they do care, you know, whatever. I don't know what sparked the Heat comeback specifically other than great basketball from the Bucks, but whatever. Another Hoopsite best bet that I lost on that I felt great about was Jaylen Brown over 20 points. Oh, man, I forgot to write down who was it against. I want to say it was the Nets. He blew two free throws at the end of regulation at 18 points, and I ended up losing that bet. Two free throws, and I would have gotten it if he just landed on 20. That stunk. Also, something that you can definitely weigh in on, Boston essentially committed a hate crime on the Toronto Raptors on Friday. What was that?
Yeah, that was rough. I really don't know. You wanted to think that the Raptors, that was their most important game of the bubble here. They had to beat the Boston Celtics to show they were the rightful two seed. I mean, they're still the two seed. So it doesn't really matter that much, but it was frustrating, and it was a weird game for the Raptors. It really went against everything else they had done know, they clobbered the Los Angeles Lakers. They beat the Heat pretty comfortably. They came back. They beat the Bucks. Yeah, Monday, I believe. Yeah, and beat the Memphis Grizzlies, which, as you know, probably doesn't mean a whole lot in this bubble basketball. The Memphis Grizzlies aren't who we thought they were. But yeah, that was egg against the Boston Celtics, and I hope that was just hiding stuff for the postseason and the possible case of a second, third round matchup. I don't know.
I don't put much stock into it, honestly. You know, you see this all the time in baseball. Teams will give up 20 runs, and, you know, it's just they're all pros. They're all just like, whatever, have short memory on these type of things. I don't know. Boston looked really good, but, you know, with the new, the random nature that is 2019-2020 NBA, teams get hot and just the points could pile up, especially other teams use the same methods that a team will use to get hot, i.e., you know, free throw shooting, being aggressive, and obviously, most importantly, three-point shooting. That's why you see these crazy runs, especially from teams like the Rockets, but all teams now because they're shooting so many threes. So, you know, if a game gets out of hand early, there's always a chance that a team could shoot their way back into it. They can also just compound mistakes and it really get ahead of out of hand. And that's pretty much what happened with the Raptors. Moving over to baseball, unless you got any other basketball thoughts, because we do have to get to hockey and the NFC West preview.
Yeah, I think our main takeaway from that small basketball discussion is that we're ready for the playoffs. We're ready for these basketball games to actually matter and to be able to get proper reads on these and have them play out like they should. So we'll dive deeper into basketball next week with those playoffs starting.
I'm just so pumped I can't lose any more money on the Memphis Grizzlies once the playoffs probably when the playoffs start. I'm not going to bet the Memphis Grizzlies anymore, but it doesn't look like they're going to be in the playoff picture. Although they're holding
on. No, they helped you out there.
All right, so we're going to talk real quick about Major League Baseball division bets. I think I'm more queuing this up for you, though. I feel good about where I'm at. I like the Cleveland Indians to win AL Central at plus 270 preseason, and right now they're at plus 240. They're in second place behind the Twins, who are the favorites, but they're only a game out. I feel fine with where I'm at. What were some of the things that you that stuck out to you in the beginning of the baseball season?
The big one for me is over in the NL West. We got the Colorado Rockies as of Tuesday, August 11th. They're 11-5, a half game up on the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're plus 500 to win that division. The Dodgers are minus 400. Yes, we know the Dodgers are the better team, but they're the team who they don't need another division crown. They just need to get into the playoffs, give themselves that chance at a World Series. So you go late into the season, if they're still hanging around and they're guaranteed one of those two wildcard spots, now they even got the second place in the division gets into the playoffs, so they don't even need those wildcards. So later in the year, they're going to start resting those top pitchers a little bit more, I think. Whereas the Rockies, you know, winning a division crown this year would be a big thing for them. So I see them going at full tilt for the full 60 games or however many close to that they get to play. So I would not – well, you certainly can't bet the Dodgers at minus 400 to win it, but I think the Rockies right now, what we've seen from them so far this year at plus 500 to stay on top of that division, I think that's a great bet at good value.
All right, but my only thought is, to push back on that, is why would the Dodgers be resting anyone in a 60-game season? Like, especially if they don't have any cushion. I mean, their division is really one of the best in baseball through one quarter of the season at this point. They're minus 400. Not any value that I would be chasing or that I would be buying, but Colorado Rockies plus 500 in their half game up, and San Diego Padres. I have them going over 30 and a half wins. So I think they can make a division. Make a division charge themselves, NL West charge. Fernando Tatis is the early season MVP, or one of the contenders for early season MVP. And I actually like their pitching staff more than Colorado. That's my thing with Colorado, is that I think they can, their pitching staff can end up crapping the bed. But again, I guess so, to help you, because I just vomited a whole bunch of shit in your direction. You're not nervous about the idea of 60 games and the Dodgers not being able to rest players?
I don't think the Dodgers will need to. They're, if not the second best team in that division, because, yes, I like the Padres too, and they've looked good so far to start the year. So say the Dodgers finish third in that division and then get a wild card spot. I think that's fine. That's fine for them. Their issue in the postseason the last several years is these top stud pitchers tiring out and not being as good as they're supposed to be in the first, second round of the playoffs. Cough, cough, Clayton Kershaw. So
take it. He doesn't deserve that. He doesn't need that.
I think they can certainly, if they're in control of that top wildcard spot, they're going to, you know, call up, throw in some sub pitchers there those last 10 or so games, and they don't care about another division crown.
Fair enough. I mean,
so whether it's the Padres, which we've talked about on the show, we both like, or the Rockies, I just think the Rockies at plus 500, a quarter of the way through the season, sitting on top of that division, you got to put at least a little bit on that.
I'm pushing back on what you said, but I hear what you're saying. I hear your point, and I don't hate it, because again, we're already a quarter way through the season. You know, if this was a 162 game season, you're looking at making this bet, I would tackle you. But I you know, they have possibly the best lineup in baseball, between Trevor Story, Charlie Blackmon. I really like Daniel Murphy, Nolan Arenado. I always mess his name up. He's going to the Hall of Fame. But they have awesome, you know, awesome lineup. It's just a matter of that the German Marquez and Kyle Freeland could anchor the rotation, and that's kind of really always the question about Colorado.
Yeah, we got John Gray too, but obviously that rotation is always the question mark. The bullpen isn't a whole lot better. So I don't know if that's going to matter in the shorter year where, you know, you have a lot of rotations that are turning out to not be very good once you lose a guy or two from each one. So I think that playing at Coors Field, they can at least outscore most people in every home game. And yeah, it's a good value to me. And I'm placing money on the Rockies. We'll revisit that and go into the window later on.
Sounds good. All right, let's get over to our NHL series draft here.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. MGM Buggin'.
Now, just to kind of set the stage for you guys, what we're looking at here, what we're doing here is that each, me and Esther are going to have a pickoff of the series prices for the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's eight series, so four picks each. We're going to alternate back and forth with me getting the first pick. We flipped a coin beforehand, and I won the coin toss, so I'm taking the first pick. We're going to take the series price of the team that we drafted or the team that we were forced to take based on mine or Essen's draft pick, and then we'll calculate who banked the most from their drafted team series wins at the end of this. Case in point, like if I were to draft Vegas Golden Knights with the first pick, they're minus 334. If I win that, or if Vegas wins that series, I'll get $100 plus, or I'll get $100 win out of that. If they lose, Essen would get a plus $260 win there. Does that sound right? Rules,
okay,
make sense?
Yeah. It works for me.
All right, so I get to go first again because I won the coin toss. My first draft pick off the board is going to be, I'm going to go with the Montreal Canadiens. They're third in the Corsi percentage rankings. They're second in scoring chances for percentage. And they are third in, let me make sure I have this acronym right, high danger scoring chances. They are 1-2 in the regular season against against the Philadelphia Flyers, excuse me. But both of their losses were in overtime. And also, aren't they coming in as the hottest team, or at least off the biggest qualifier upset and beating the Penguins?
Yes. Yeah, they took the Penguins in four games. I don't see a second upset in them. You said the Flyers won that series 2-1. Their one loss was with third-string goalie Alex Leon in net. Carter Hart's back and healthy. Brian Elliott played a good game in the qualification round. You're taking Montreal with your first pick. I love getting the Flyers on the opposite end of that.
All right. Well, hey, I guess whatever that worked out for you, possibly. We'll see how that works. I'm chasing value here. I'm trying to get the biggest payouts. What do you like for your first pick?
I'm going to play it a little bit safer than you. I'm going to go with the Boston Bruins -150 against the Carolina Hurricanes +125. This is now the 4-5 matchup in the Eastern Conference. The Bruins were first in the East after the regular season. They slipped to 4. They had a pretty bad run in that Eastern Conference round robin tournament. But these are the Boston Bruins. These are Stanley Cup champions. They've been quite vocal about the round robin and how much they despise the concept of it really from the start. So that didn't mean a whole lot to them. This is a group that's been together a long time for a lot of long postseason runs. -150 to beat the Carolina Hurricanes. I'm taking that. You enjoy Carolina on the other end, +125.
Well, let me tell you, Eston, you think you got one over on me, but I had him on my big board, believe it or not. We got the revenge of the Eastern Conference Finals 2019. Didn't Boston sweep them last year?
Yes.
You know, that's going to piss Carolina off. You know that. Also, they have a better Corsi rating. I keep saying a Corsi, like the old GM of the Giants. Better Corsi rating. They're better in scoring chances for percentage. They got a higher scoring chances for percentage. They negate Boston's special team prowess because they're both top 10 in power play and penalty kill. You seem to think that that's somewhat random. I don't. I don't know. I'll kind of defer to you on the expertise, but hey, the higher the rankings, the better. That's what I'm going for here, especially when I'm handicapping one team against the other. And also, John Carlson's banged up. They're Norris Trophy winning defenseman. That's an issue.
Yeah, I'm taking the Bruins. Played 2 more games. They scored 5 more goals. They allowed 19 fewer goals. Yeah, I mentioned Corsi. The Bruins were still above 50%. That's all shot attempts, blocked and missed shots factor in there. And we're looking at 5-on-5 play as well to negate the power plays, penalty kills. So in that series, if that goes 7 games, I'm taking Tuukka Rask over Peter Mrazek. So the longer that series goes, the better for me. They swept them last year. They won the regular season series 2-0. -150, that is a recency bias line based on Boston slipping from first to that fourth seed.
And again, it happened in a round robin they didn't care about. That's what you're thinking.
That's my stance. The theme of this episode is kind of handicapping motivation. I'm going to revert back on that one and say the Boston Bruins are quite motivated, and I'm taking them with that factor.
All right, so this would be my second pick, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go with the New York Islanders. Every Capital fan that I know doesn't have any faith in Braden Holtby?
Yes.
I know Sam, you're going to have to help me out with this one too. Samsonov is a better goalie, has been playing better this year, but he's injured.
He sure looked it in the regular season. Yes, he wasn't available for the start of that round robin, so Braden Holtby had to play all 3 games. He looked okay. He's not the Vezina Trophy winner. He was. He's probably still good enough to win a cup for that team. But, yeah, you're right. Ilya Samsonov was the better goalie in the regular season. Don't really know if he's going to be coming back or not. It kind of seems like no. But they had some injuries in the round robin play. Those guys are back. That's going to be a big difference.
Islanders are 2-2 in the season series. And in the qualifier round, they beat Eston's sleeper pick for the Stanley Cup, the Florida Panthers. Right? You liked them, didn't you?
I did. It was them or the Flyers. Well, at least I still got the Flyers.
And also, we got the revenge of Barry Trotz.
Yes.
The head coach of the New York Islanders was the head coach of the Stanley Cup winning Washington Capitals.
And they fired him
the next year. Or they didn't bring him back, right?
Just didn't re-sign him. They just didn't offer him a contract, which I think was probably fair. He wanted a lot of money. Yeah, he won a cup with the Caps. The Caps were a very talented team. It wasn't just the coaching. He certainly helped. He was better than the coaches they had before in playoff failures. But they chose to forego paying the coach, kept the offense, the defense intact, and I think it's working out pretty well for both sides. Barry Trotz has those Islanders looking good in the playoffs for the second straight year.
Who's your second pick?
My second pick will be, well, I was going to take the Calgary Flames over the Dallas Stars at plus 110. Dallas Stars were minus 130. But that game started and finished in the time that this Tampa Bay-Columbus game played. So we'll save that one.
But oh, man, I have that on my big board.
I do still like the Flames. So I will go to another Western Canadian team, the Vancouver Canucks, at plus 165 over the St. Louis Blues at minus 200. The Canucks won the regular season matchup 2-1.
They got lucky.
The St. Louis Blues were the better Corsi team in the regular season. Want to look at fancy stats. The Blues were 50.79%, 13th in the NHL, which really not as good as you would have expected for a defending Stanley Cup team. And as good as they were in that respect last year, the Canucks, they were just 48.43%, 23rd in the NHL. The Canucks allowed more goals. They scored three more goals in two fewer games played. I like the Vancouver Canucks in that first-round matchup against the Minnesota Wild, especially losing the first game in a shutout. They bounced back nicely. The St. Louis Blues, they slipped from first to fourth in the Western Conference in that round-robin tournament. They're laying minus 200 in the series. I think there's some decent value on the Canucks at plus 165. And technically a 4-5 upset it would be. It's really a first, and I think Vancouver Canucks entered the playoffs in seventh in the West. So it's a little more lopsided, but I think the Blues are still getting a little bit too favorable of a number. At minus 200. I like the Canucks at plus 165.
All right. Do you want to give your third pick? Do you want to flip it on this end?
Okay.
So okay. Go ahead.
At the turn. Okay, the game's still going on. I like the Tampa Bay Lightning to win this series over the Columbus Blue Jackets. I wrote in a piece for Sportsbook Wire, posted Tuesday morning. I said the Columbus Blue Jackets would cover the spread tonight, Tuesday. They did that, and certainly a whole lot more. I still think Tampa's a better team. They had that motivation from getting swept last year in the first round as the President's Trophy winners. Minus 228, that's a steep number to pay, but I like it. I just can't see them losing this again as the top seed, or the number two seed in the Eastern Conference, sorry.
I feel like they're the new version of the Washington Capitals.
Yeah. Yeah, they're certainly teetering on the brink of that. I think they need a couple more years. Maybe the Capitals were right there for so long. So many tries and fails. It hasn't been all that long for this Tampa Bay Lightning core. Yes, it has been longer for Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, but the Yanni Gourdes, Braden Point, they haven't been there as long. I think this team still can get over the hurdle. Andrei Vasilevskiy, a super young goalie, a crazy good goalie, Vezina Trophy candidate again this year. So their time is coming. I don't know if they can win it this year, but I don't see them losing in the first round again.
I'll take the big dog. I don't care there. What is that? Plus 185 for me, minus 228 for you, Tampa Bay. This would be my third pick, right? Third pick, I'm gonna go with the Chicago Blackhawks plus 260. Obviously, chasing value here, going against the Vegas Golden Knights. Are the Vegas Golden Knights technically like? Do they have the most points entering this? Who's the number one team entering this? Because I see that they're the biggest.
Golden Knights are first in the West. Yeah, I think. think based on regular season, the Lightning or the Bruins and then the Lightning had the best records.
Well, the biggest favorites in the biggest favorite in the first round is the Vegas Golden Knights. So I'm taking the Chicago Blackhawks. They're three-time champions with Patrick Kane and Jonathan. I always mess this up. Is it Taves? Jonathan Taves?
Jonathan Taves.
Jonathan Taves. Yeah. So they have a championship pedigree, championship DNA. Vegas played a soft schedule. They were 25th ranked in strength of schedule. Blackhawks were third ranked in strength of schedule. And again, the big thing is the value for me. Who's your third pick?
It's not a bad pick. That is a bad pick, actually. I was going to give you a little bit of credit. I don't like that at all. They upset the Edmonton Oilers, if you can call it an upset. The Edmonton Oilers, you want to talk about playoff failures? Oh, boy. Those are really starting to pile up when they get the rare chance to even compete in the playoffs.
Sounds like you had money on them, Eston.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I've been down that road before. I did not have money on them this year. Chicago Blackhawks, yes, they got through. Corey Crawford is really their only option in net. He did not look good in that opening round against the Oilers. Vegas Golden Knights, crazy good offense. 227 goals scored in the regular season, 71 games played. They scored 3 goals per game in the round robin, and that was without leading point getter Max Pacioretty. He's coming back for this first round. Robin Leonard getting the nod in game one against his former team. Vegas takes this in a sweep. I don't see Chicago hanging around this series. They don't have the defense. They don't have the goaltending. Yes, their forwards were better than most people expected in that qualification round. That's not going to be enough. They will not be able to outscore the Vegas Golden Knights night to night. And that's one of my biggest bets for this opening day. Tuesday was the over 6.5 in that matchup.
Wait, the game didn't play already, did it?
No. It starts 10 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. So if you're listening to this Wednesday morning, as you always do, and listening and liking and subscribing, you will start your day off being able to revisit that over on Vegas, Chicago. And, you know, you can lament the money you missed out on by not listening to this sooner.
Well, I feel good having both eat seeds. I'm trying to win this whole like duel that we're having here. So I want the most value. That's what I'm going for. What was your fourth pick?
Okay. Right? Well, there's only one left, right? So it must be Dallas, Calgary.
No, it's Colorado, Arizona. I have Dallas on my big board, and that's what I wanted to go with. But you said the game's over already.
Yeah, okay, so we dropped that one.
I mean, I'll take Dallas, but win already?
I want Calgary, so.
All right, cool. I don't know who won, so, and don't even tell
Calgary
me.
Calgary won game one, so.
They got lucky.
I'll take the value there. We'll give you the updated odds tomorrow when we revisit this. So, Colorado, Arizona, the final series then?
Yep.
I'm going to go with another chalk pick. I'm going to take Colorado minus 250. I have a fair bit of chalk here on my card. You got the value plays, but I really don't see upsets in this official first round. We saw quite a few in that qualification round, like you said, with the Montreal Canadiens, the Chicago Blackhawks, two teams you took. I don't see the runs continuing. Yes, you can get lucky in a round in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's going to be tough to do it twice, especially playing the new top seed once again. The Arizona Coyotes, they took down the Nashville Predators. Nashville Predators were just not good in that qualification round series. They lost that more than the Coyotes won it. Yeah, Darcy Kemper played pretty good in net. Yes, they do have some talented forwards up there, but nothing like these Colorado Avalanche. You know, got Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, Mikko Rantanen, Nazem Kadri had a big goal in that first round. And then you got Pavel Francouz and Philip Grubauer, who are just two lights-out options in net. I like the Colorado Avalanche, and minus 250 is not low enough to deter me from taking that.
Holy shit. All right, then. We'll just leave it there. I hope everyone was writing all that down, because Eston just took me to school on hockey handicapping. If you want to read more from Eston, go to sportsbookwire.com. He does a really good job handicapping most of the hockey games, at least in the regular season. And I know you got a lot of props and, or excuse me, a lot of handicaps and posts either forthcoming or already published Sportsbook Wire for this Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes, and keep pumping them out every day. I'm one of the main hockey writers over at sportsbookwire.com. I'm into it. I do not like betting regular season hockey, partially because of that motivation factor we discussed earlier in the show. I love betting playoff hockey. You can get some real good values here, especially fading the public teams when looking for those upsets. And playoff hockey is one of my favorite sports to bet.
Well, hey, you got me inspired. You inspired me to do this whole this little game that we're doing, this series pickoff, because you said that there was a lot of parity in hockey, and that if you just went with underdogs, you have a real chance at winning and making some money. So we're gonna test that theory, and then we'll circle back and see who got the better end of our little first round series pickoff. But let's move over to scoping futures.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, Scoping Futures.
We're going to talk NFC West preview here. We started our NFL betting or division primer last week with the AFC North. Like we did last week, we're going to start from the order of projected win totals from highest to lowest. We'll start off with the NFC's representative in the Super Bowl, the San Francisco 49ers, which right now are at their win total is 10.5. The over is 115, under is 105, minus 115, minus 105. They're minus 358 to make the playoffs. Sano is plus 275. They're plus 105 to win the AFC, or excuse me, the NFC West. I'm pretty sure that line moved, though, and over the past few minutes to minus 110. I'll check up on that again. Plus 380 for the Niners to make the NFC champ, or to win the NFC, and plus 800 for the Niners to win outright. What do you think that the Niners are going to have a regression here, or do you think it's back to winning the division, back to the top of the division?
As we talked about last week with the Baltimore Ravens, the San Francisco 49ers are in a similar boat with a lot of people calling for regression. Yes, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't that great last year. A lot of that was overcoming that knee injury. He has spoken about that this offseason and talking about how much better that knee feels. 10.5 for that over-under in the win total. 13-3 last year, so we already have some room built in for that regression. I was kind of on the fence until I looked into their schedule. They start versus the Arizona Cardinals, at the New York Jets, at the New York Giants, versus the Philadelphia Eagles, versus the Miami Dolphins, versus the Los Angeles Rams, and then at New England Patriots for their first semi-tough game of the year. Very good chance that isn't tough. And then Seattle Seahawks for maybe that'll be their first tough game. I can see these 49ers starting 0-6, 0-7, and then they have the Washington Redskins in week 14.
You said six? You mean 6-0?
Yes.
All right, you said 0-6, 0-7.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, 6-0, 7-0. My apologies. Yeah, that season opening schedule's fantastic. I can see that propelling them on to a couple wins, and then you got the Washington football team late in the season. That 10.5 is very manageable to me. And I do like the over at minus 115.
All right. Yeah, I don't hate the over. Let me push back on the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing. He's become underrated at this point. He was Pro Football Focus's 13th ranked quarterback at a 37 graded. He was 12th in QBR, 9th in completion percentage above or over expectation, 8th in quarterback rating, 3rd in yards per attempt. He was 4th in a fourth lowest bad throw percentage and fourth highest on target percentage. The big thing about him, though, is that he's a dink and dunk quarterback. He was 31st in attended air yards over pass attempts, but that fits into the kind of Kyle Shanahan mold, right? He's trying to get the ball out to George Kittle or Debo Samuel or this new wide receiver they draft in the first round. I can't pronounce his name. Ayuk. I should figure out how to pronounce all these names before I go into this, huh? Anyways.
Brandon A.
He threw against the 10th toughest schedule of pass defenses in 2019. It's going to get a little bit easier this year when he's throwing against the – excuse me, he's throwing against the 19th toughest pass efficiency defense this year compared to 10th last year. He's great under pressure, 6th in pressure accuracy percentage. So Jimmy G, I feel like, is underrated at this point. He was 2nd in most game-winning drives and tied for 1st and 4th quarter comebacks. I, like you, do like the over because of their cupcake schedule, especially to start off the year. I don't like them to win the division, but I think we're going to have another NFC West situation where we have two teams over 11 wins. Definitely double digits, but I'll just go with the over plus 10.5 because, again, their schedule is just a cupcake. Do you have any other notes about the 49ers?
Yeah, just what a favorable schedule for a team that went to the Super Bowl a year ago. And to Garoppolo again, it wasn't a factor of he can't throw deep. He just never needed to because that defense was good and the running game was good. So they always had great field position, and they always usually had big leads. So he didn't need to air it out 20, 30 yards every time. I think he can still do that at least feasibly well. I agree with you that Jimmy Garoppolo is being written off prematurely based on the stuff that he didn't need to do last year.
Right.
He never showed that he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's an above average quarterback. I don't know if he's like top 10 because it's weird. I don't want to knock him for having a great coach, but you know, a top 10, like my thought is if a top 10 quarterback is a top 10 quarterback, he would play great for the New York Jets, right? That's kind of how I frame this, right? And could Jimmy Garoppolo have the Jets being a winning team? I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't put him in the Russell Wilson, Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson tier of quarterback. But if he's given, you know, a great system and he's with Kyle Shanahan for the foreseeable future, he has the opportunity to look good. One of the factors here for success is if they're going to be able to get the same amount of coverage sacks as they did last year. They had by far the best secondary in the league. Not by far, but they had the best secondary in the league. Richard Sherman had the number one graded season for any cornerback, according to Pro Football Focus. They were 2nd in sack rate, and they had the 4th lowest blitz rate. They were tied for 16th in quarterback hits because they're not just beating their man and getting to the quarterback. A little bit of it is, you know, the secondary being able to give them time to get to the quarterback. Warren Sharp, the NFL football guru, said that the 49ers pass rushers got very little pressure in early down passes. They're going from the 12th to the 4th toughest schedule, and from the 13th toughest to the 3rd toughest schedule of offenses faced. So it's going to be a little bit tougher for this defense, and I think we're going to see some natural regression. But again, like, we're picking nits here. 49ers should be sick next year.
Yeah, we have 2.5 games of cushion there with this 2020 over-under. I can see 11 games, certainly, and that's fine for me.
Moving on to the Seahawks. I'm big about the Seahawks. They're actually my team to win the Super Bowl. I think we're going to get another year of improvement for Pete Carroll play calling. I feel like most favorite things of football nerds to do is to knock Pete Carroll and his play calling, and it's pretty stale, and it gets Russell Wilson a lot of 3rd and longs, and his brilliance is able to throw its way out of there or play it, convert first downs essentially. But you know, their over under is only 9.5, and it's minus 105. The only year that Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson went under 10 wins was 2017. They had the toughest schedule, or the 2nd toughest schedule in 2019. They're going down to the 16th toughest schedule. The pass defenses they face are going to be far easier, going from 2nd toughest to 13th toughest. That's just going to help Russell Wilson. And people are bummed out that Russell Wilson doesn't have more weapons and they didn't really invest in wide receivers as much as I think a lot of fantasy football players and Madden players would have liked them to, but they invested in what Pete Carroll wants to call, which is heavier sets. They brought in Greg Olsen. They have Will Disley back healthy. Their third tight end, his name is slipping me, is an above average blocker, and they're looking to play a lot of the 12. So I think their offseason moves match what they're going for, and the Jamal Adams pickup is huge, because that secondary has the opportunity to be in the conversation with the 49ers and Ravens as best in the league. So I'm huge on the Seahawks. They have the championship pedigree, and I think this is going to be their year to win the NFC West, and I think they're going to make it to the Super Bowl.
Wow. I'm certainly a lot more timid and lukewarm than you are. I wouldn't classify it as down on them, that over under 9.5. I have under penciled in at -115. That O-line is still not great. They barely addressed it in the draft. They took Damian Lewis in the third round at right guard. That was about it. Otherwise, you got the same guy as Dwayne Brown. Yeah. It's not very deep, and that's still a weakness. I don't know how they haven't addressed it in the draft at this point. But we talked about the San Francisco 49ers schedule, and this is what I will, at least to go with you a little bit and to maybe give you and others an advice, I'm going to say hold off on any Seahawks futures bets until a little later in the season. They kind of have a bit of a reverse schedule of the 49ers. They end the year with the Cardinals at home, at the Eagles, Giants at home, Jets at home, at Washington football team, Rams at home, and then a tough one on the road against the 49ers in week 17. So I'm going to wait on them. Let's see how those first 10 weeks or so play out. See what those numbers are then, if they're 5-5, 6-4. And then I can see them rifling off 6 wins at the end of the year here. I'm going to wait and get hopefully a more profitable number at that point ahead of what could be a great end of season run.
Well, right now they're sitting at +1,800 to win the Super Bowl. Russell Wilson is the second favorite to win the MVP at +600. I'm not going to bet either one of those futures.
It seems high.
+600?
Or low. Not profitable enough.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I mean, I agree with him being the second favorite, that's for sure. And +1,800 isn't a terrible value for Super Bowl, for a Super Bowl future, but I think I talked about this last week. I'm just not crazy about playing a Super Bowl future. I'm probably not going to play it midseason, but I'm definitely going to the window with the Seahawks. And I'm excited about their season. A team that I'm not so excited about, though, is the Los Angeles Rams. How do you feel about the Los Angeles Rams?
Not as poorly as you do, but still taking the under on this 8.5, -125. So that's clearly what the books are thinking here. That 8.5 seems high. A lot of people still caught up in that team that went to the Super Bowl. At this point, they're quite a bit different than that team that went to the Super Bowl. Not just on-field play, but even the makeup of the roster is starting to look quite different. 9-7 last year, missed the playoffs for the first time in 3 years. They were 11th in points per game, 7th in yards per game. Their schedule, compared to the two teams we just talked about, isn't quite split like that. They have those easy and hard games mixed in there. So they're not going to be able to get off or close on the kind of runs as those other divisional opponents. That 8.5 is high for me, and that's still built on the public perception of Sean McVay being coach of the year, Jared Goff having that great year, Todd Gurley having a good year. Todd Gurley's gone. Cam Akers is probably going to be their starting running back this year. Don't really know how that's going to go. They lost Brandon Cooks. Fine. Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp were already probably better. But that defense, they've lost some key pieces as well. I don't see them being a 500 team. Give me 7-9 on that.
Yeah, I think they're going to be the worst team in the division, actually. We could be looking at a 10-loss season, double-digit loss season. I think the Brandon Cooks, the loss of Brandon Cooks is huge because all we've ever known the Rams is a good 11-personnel team, three wide receivers. And he was one of the three, and he was an explosive receiver on the explosive outside receiver. When I think most people think that that's Cooper Kupp's role, but Cooper Kupp actually excels in the slot. And based on the personnel, he's going to get a lot less time in the slot and have to be what is the term that I'm looking for? Wide out receiver. One of the receiver that plays outside of the hash marks. I'm slipping now, and I'm forgetting it now. Like you said, they lost a lot of key pieces in defense. Corey Littleton, one of the better off-ball linebackers in the league. Dante Fowler was underwhelming when he was drafted, but played really well next to Aaron Donald. You could go ahead and make the argument that Leonard Floyd, the guy they brought in to replace him, is going to do something similar. We'll see. I don't, you know, it is pretty easy, comparatively speaking, getting to the pass rusher when you're lined up next to Aaron Donald. Eric Weddle retired. He was a multiple-time Pro Bowl safety. Greg Zuerlein, Greg the Leg, he's no longer on the team. He's with the Cowboys. That guy was the best kicker in the league for a long, long time. And this matters. This is one of the things that I believe field goal kicking and Greg the Leg not having him there is going to be a rude awakening for definitely the special teams and just being able to rely on someone banging mid-50 yard kicks through the uprights is huge. Something that you hit on that I just kind of want to piggyback off of. If you like the Rams this year, you should bet Cam Akers to win Offensive Rookie of the Year at plus 2,500. If the Rams go over their win total, if the Rams are in the playoffs, it is because they get back to a dominant run game and Cam Akers lives up to the potential that he had coming out of high school. He was a five-star recruit at Florida State. I think this is a sneaky good draft pick. If that offensive line, which was injured and thin last year, can get back to just dominating the point of attack, Cam Akers is awesome. He is a three-down running back. I am very low on Jared Goff. That's why I don't like what's going on here. And I'm not huge into Sean McVay, to be honest. You know, I think that the NFL has figured him out. You know, he was great in the first couple seasons, but I think there's going to be some regression, or I think he's going to be closer to a 500 coach. He was very predictable last year. Whenever they were down, he would get into 11 personnel, and he would throw it the most in the league. When the Rams were down, they threw it the most in the league. When they and they ran it the least, so they're very predictable, and I think that's going to catch up to Sean McVay. I love the under here. I love under minus 125, under 8.5.
I love your Cam Akers take there. That's very smart, Jeff. And this is a year where that Offensive Rookie of the Year award is probably more wide open than it's ever been. You know, these rookies coming in, they haven't had the normal amount of time with the playbook, with their quarterbacks, their other offensive guys.
Mm-hmm.
So Cam Akers is the guy a little bit farther down on the board, which I like for all player futures awards in all sports this year. Already somewhere I'm looking is that mid to late tier. Cam Akers with a chance to shine on a team that at least a lot of people expect to be good. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the Rams will be good. Taking that shot on the Cam Akers future is a great hedge against that.
Yeah, again, if you like the Rams, that's my thing, is their offensive line was much worse last year. You know, they went from 7th in 2017 in yards per attempt and 3rd in 2019 in yards per attempt to 27th last year at 3.7 yards per attempt. Everyone wants to clown the Todd Gurley signing or extension. And they were always saying, you don't spend that kind of money on a running back. You should just go with Darrell Henderson. And I think Malcolm Brown was the other guy. Hey, Todd Gurley sucked last year. Those other guys sucked last year, right? And we can just go ahead and say it's the offensive line. Fair enough. So if the offensive line is better this year, Cam Akers stands to benefit. The Rams stand to benefit. That's exactly what Jared Goff needs. So it's just a matter of feel like the Rams. I would take Cam Akers at plus 2,500. And back to your point, like, yeah, they're not going to – Joe Burrow, it's going to take them a little while to get used to game speed. Tua Tagovailoa is not going to start the season, so that pretty much rules him out as rookie of the year. Justin Herbert is not going to start the season. Henry Ruggs is a slot wide receiver for the Las Vegas Raiders going to win the offensive rookie of the year. No, I don't think so. I would rather bet on a running back who's going to get a lot of usage, which I think Cam Akers will. So that's my quick little Rams handicap. But again, I'm on the under, so I'm not going to bet the Cam Akers thing, even though I do think he could be really good for them. But under 8.5 wins. Arizona Cardinals. Again, I think they're going to finish ahead of the Rams. I think they're going to be third in the NFC West, but they are projected to have the lowest win total. Right now, they're at 6.5 wins. Right? Mm-hmm. Do I have that right? 6.5 wins, yeah. Over minus 164, under plus 135.
Give me that over all day, and I'll pay the minus 164 for it. No problem. 5-10-1 last year, so he already turn that tie into a win. There's 6-4-year playoff drought. That I don't know if that ends this year. The addition of DeAndre Hopkins, huge. A full year of Kenyon Drake instead of any David Johnson. He's gone, so that's a big win right there. Offensively last year, 22.6 points per game, ranked 17th in the NFL. They were 21st by yards. DeAndre Hopkins is a big add there, and Cliff Kingsbury came in last year from college, and a lot of people, I don't want to say criticized, because a lot of people seem to like that move, but a lot of people questioned, I guess, at least at the start.
Oh, I was one of them. I hate
a college offensive coordinator coming straight into a head coaching gig in the NFL. Well, now he kind of has similar to a college offense, I guess, just with those three wide receivers. Three great wide receivers in DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald, still getting it done. I like the Cardinals offense to do what Cliff Kingsbury wants it to do, and for it to have the personnel this year to live up to his potential. And that defense is still questionable. I don't know if they're going to make the moves they need to. Justin Simmons is a big add in the draft and the center of that. Isaiah Simmons. So maybe that's enough to turn that into a competent defense, which is kind of really all they should need with how good that offense has the potential to be.
Yeah. I mean, I agree in the sense that, you know, we're seeing in all sports, offense is pacing the game. And that's I guess, like, the analytic push is going for that. And that's what we see in the NFL as well, not just basketball. So, like, if the Cardinals can control the tempo with their, you know, unique sets and their unique schemes, which Cliff Kingsbury is bringing to the table, then their defense doesn't have to be elite. I mean, obviously, the better the defense is, the better chance they have of winning the NFC West. But I hated the Cliff Kingsbury hire. I hated it. I thought he was going to be maybe one of those one and done guys, like the guy they had before, Steve Wilks. But he adjusted well on the fly last year. There was a whole bunch of injuries, especially to the wide receiver group, and he wanted to come in and do a 10 personnel. It's where we run four wide receivers, do his air raid bullshit from college. But hey, it blew up in his face because of the injuries. He went to more two tight end sets, and then the Cardinals were feisty. They were a good team. I'm high on Kyler Murray. As low as I am about Cliff, or I was on Cliff Kingsbury, I'm high on Kyler Murray. I am one of those, like, prove it type guys, though. Everyone's expecting a second year breakout similar to Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. He's capable, but This is tied with the AFC North as the division most likely to have a Super Bowl champion, because it is the second, if not the toughest, division in the NFL. And I think Cardinals are going to get beat up a little bit by the Seahawks and the 49ers, and they're more looking to next year. Have some moral victories here in 2020. I'm not of the mindset of you are about the laying a -164. I would actually just go under because of the heavy juice. So the under is +135. I'm not going to take this one to the window. Spoiler alert. But I wouldn't bet the over because of the juice. That's how I feel about it.
I'm still on the over. Like these schedules, looking at these schedules, the NFC West, great opponents this year. The Cardinals are another team. Starts the season extremely favorably. On the road against the 49ers, okay, that's probably a loss. Then they host Washington Football Team, host the Detroit Lions, at the Carolina Panthers, at the New York Jets. There's probably four wins. That's pretty close to that 6.5. I like the Cardinals this year, and you touched on it. A lot of people earlier, at least maybe closer to the end of last year, were all on that second-year quarterback hype train following in the wake of Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, for Kyler Murray. This number of 6.5 doesn't seem to be factoring that in very much, only being a 1.5 of what they did last year in his rookie year, and then adding one of the top weapons a quarterback can have in DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I hear you. But again, I would say that the projection is just based on the strength of the division itself. Like you said, they do have cupcakes in the weeks 2 through 5. I think the Lions are actually going to be pretty good. We'll talk about that in the NFC North preview. But their other three games are winnable, and so is the Lions. Hey, they tied at the Lions last year, and it's not as terrible of a schedule as they had last season. They go from their opponents had the fifth best total efficiency last year, and they're going down to 12th. So it's a little bit easier. And their opponent's defensive efficiency is now below average at 17. That was 12. So, you know, the Cardinals will play a little bit easier of a schedule, but at the end of the day, I do like the under. If I were to gun to my head, I had to go with any one of those. But are you ready to go to the window and make some bets and get out of here?
Let's do it. We've gone on long enough.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
All right. So at the end of each episode, Eston and I will circle back to our favorite bets and lock them in our segment, Going to the Window. How about you start it off, Eston? What do you like? What are you betting on?
I'm going to start it off with my weekly golf picks, sportsbookwire.com, golf week as well. The Windham Championship this week, it's certainly a step back from the PGA Championship last week. Got the FedEx Cup playoffs starting next week, so this is kind of the interlude, if you will. I like Brendan Todd at a juicy +3,500, and I like Patrick Reed at +1,600. Those are my only two outright bets for this week. I think that's all you need to be making for a slightly watered-down event, and the field's much stronger than it usually is with the FedEx Cup playoffs just on the horizon, and a lot of guys still needing points with this condensed season this year. Brendan Todd, 3,500, tied for 17th last week. He had a share of the first-round lead with Jason Day, slipped down a little bit. He's a two-time winner this year. This is a weaker field than the last few events. He's third on tour this season in driving accuracy, and he leads in scrambling. Those are two key stats for Sedgefield Country Club, where they're playing this week in Greensboro, North Carolina. Patrick Reed, he won here in 2013, tied for 13th last week. He's 10th on tour in strokes gained around the green, and he's 6th in the FedEx Cup standings, looking to climb a little bit higher before the official start, and he defends next week at the Northern Trust. These guys, two bets, one at 3,500, one at +1,600. I think he got a little bit lighter, and like we saw last year, fill it in with those top 10s and matchup bets.
all my going to the window picks are just going to be with the NFC West division preview that we just did. I'm going over 9.5 wins for the Seattle Seahawks, -105. I already handicapped what I thought their season could be. I like them to win the Super Bowl, so definitely like them over 9.5 wins. And I like under Rams 8.5 wins at -125. Again, I'm not going to, you know, regurgitate everything I just said, but, you know, we're at going to the window, so I'm giving you a peek at my betting slip here. What are some of the other picks that you got on your slip?
As we touched on earlier, or discussed earlier, the Colorado Rockies +500 to win the NL West. That's a juicy number for a team in good position a quarter of the way into the season. Like you said, if this was a full 162 games, yes, you're going to add a couple zeros onto that number to get me to take the Colorado Rockies after an 11-5 start. But we're a quarter of the way in. Games have mattered thus far. And I don't see the Los Angeles Dodgers giving you their full attention and their full effort late in the year. They're going to rest Mookie Betts down the stretch. He's already had a little bit of injury trouble early on. And I think you're going to see Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler probably miss some starts later in the year. Rockies are well worth a shot at +500.
So my last bet on the slip, on my slip, I actually had something else written down. Well, I had two things written down. I had the over San Francisco 10.5 wins. I'm crossing that one off. I don't feel like betting that one. I think Seattle's going to win that division, and having two teams be in double digits and my pick to win the division still holding up seems pretty thin. So I'm kind of leaning towards San Francisco under, but I'm more doing that to talk myself into being more confident about Seattle. What I am definitely putting on the bet slip is the exact order of the NFC West and the top two. I'm going Seattle 1, San Francisco 2 at +375. So that's that has to be the final standings in the NFC West, but that's what I like. Seattle 1, San Francisco 2, +375.
That's good value for just the opposite of what most people would say is the most likely result. You're got it down to two teams. Most people are saying 49ers Seahawks. That's what I personally agree with. But getting +375 just for the reverse order of that at the top, I think that's a good bet. You're on the ball there.
I mean, the Seahawks got tackled at the half yard line in week 17. To end the season, and if they had scored that touchdown against the 49ers, they would have won the division, and they would have been hosting at least one playoff game. So it's not like as great as the 49ers, as great of a season as they had, they could have lost the division at the end of the year, like in the final game. And everyone, again, like, it feels like, going back to my whole Seahawks thing, feels like people are pretty negative on Pete Carroll and pretty negative about on John Snyder and the roster they built around Russell Wilson, but they're not giving enough credit to the fact that, hey, they know how to win games. They have some regression stats, right? They were 10-2 in one score victories, and a lot of people like to say, especially gamblers, like, they're, you know, you're due for some regression year over year on that. However, my pushback is that, like, Russell Wilson's going to the Hall of Fame. Pete Carroll's going to the Hall of Fame. There's most NFL games are essentially coin flips. You know, like, if they're champions who are Hall of Famers, maybe they know how to win coin flips. You know, maybe it's just that simple. You know, I don't expect 10-2 one score games, but I expect, yeah, I expect a 60%+ win percentage in those one score games out of the great Russell Wilson. So I'm going exact order, not to belabor the point. Seattle 1, San Francisco 2, +375. Do you have anything else on your slip?
I'll wrap it up. Circle back to the Boston Bruins -150 against the Carolina Hurricanes. That is still a juicy number for a team that was the best team in the regular season. That number's gone down. Or sorry, it's become more profitable just because they slipped from first to fourth based on that round robin tournament that they say they don't care about. So they won that regular season series 2-0. They won last year's playoff series. Carolina Hurricanes can try for revenge as much as they want. The Boston Bruins equally want to win it again because they want to get back to the playoffs to get revenge against the St. Louis Blues or whoever they meet in the Stanley Cup final. So Boston Bruins minus 150 to win their first round series against the Carolina Hurricanes. That is my final bet for the week, and we'll wait and see how that one plays out.
Edson, if I beat you in that first round NHL Stanley Cup playoff, like pick'em draft that we just did, I'm going to be talking so much shit. So much shit. You're going to see the worst version of me if I win that one, because I have no business winning that one. You had so many sick hockey handicaps and takes and that whole section. I'm just sitting there like, well, Blackhawks won the championship. They won the Stanley Cup a few times. Hey, but, well, I'm testing your theory, essentially. You said there's a lot of parity.
Right. You drafted well. You went for the win. You only need to get a couple of picks right, and you're going to beat me even if I win 6 out of 8 matchups. So you stuck me with the chalk, and that was good drafting at the very least. Don't like a lot of the picks, but can't fault the strategy too much.
Well, we'll probably touch on this next week. I mean, next week, we are going to touch on this on the Bet Slippin' podcast. We're going to revisit the Stanley Cup playoffs, check out how our series bets are looking, and also discuss the opening few days of the NBA playoffs. We'll continue our NFL divisional previews as well. We're going to do the AFC West next week, with the which is the home of the reigning champion Kansas City Chiefs. But that's it for this week's Bet Slippin' podcast. We'll talk to you again next week. Peace out.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' podcast with Jeff Clark and Edson McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.